Every now and then I get surprised by a social media trend or some trend on the internet when something goes viral. I don't know about you. About a decade ago, one of these popped up. There's been many since, but it's still, to me, one of the most bizarre things that popped up. And it was called dog shaming. Anybody remember this? Anybody remember seeing this online? Apparently, by the way, it's still a thing. You can actually get a calendar if you would like to. Dogshaming.com. I am not getting money for the advertising. But this thing went viral, and it's amazing because if you're unfamiliar, you catch your dog doing something, behaving badly, and you create a witty sign, and you shame them. Like your beloved pet, you shame them before the world. And I just thought this was strange. I don't know if, is anybody curious for a few examples? We're doing it anyway. Okay, so here's the first one. Like, here's an example. I took 4 sticks of butter from a grocery bag, ate 2, smeared the 3rd in the couch. Mom's still searching for the 4th. Here's another one. This is a personal favorite. 0 days since I decided to hunt for bacon in the wall. First of all, look at the amount of slobber there. Second, why are they looking for bacon in the wall? I think they have a rodent problem. Anyway, so here's actually probably the best one. I pooped in the AC vent. Now the entire house smells. So you get the idea. And I'm like, oh, and you love your dog? I mean, look at the puppy's eyes. I mean, we had a collective awe there. That was a beautiful moment. And just after being critical of this, by the way, I realized, like, I don't do this with my dog because I don't have a dog. I do this with my children. In fact, right after thinking about this, I pulled up my social media, and one of the most recent pictures was this one right here. And I captioned it, figuring out potty training on my own. What is not pictured here is the older sibling who did not flush before this happened. True story. Here's the thing. We have a cultural fascination I want to talk about today. And the cultural fascination that we have a cultural fascination with the gotcha moment. We love this. And I don't know why this is. I'm not smart enough. I will talk to you someday about this with my therapist, but I have not yet. But we love this. We love to leverage the gotcha moment for entertainment in our world and for news and for clicks and this fascination has fueled shows like Dateline and FBI Most Wanted, TMZ, reality TV, and now with social media. I mean, every opportunity to spill the tea or catch people behaving badly shows up on TikTok and Instagram and X. In fact, just real quick, and I want everybody at all of our locations, anybody who's watching this, if you're around other people, I want you to raise your hand if you saw this story right here. Did you see? How many of you saw this story? Show of hands. Yeah, in the room I'm in, most everybody in the room. This is Scottie Scheffler, the world's number one golfer by a long shot. And in the middle of the PGA Championship, one morning he turned a direction that he thought an officer was telling him to go, and he got arrested. And he's sitting in jail. He's stretching in jail, hoping to get out to make it to his tea time. And I watched online as people, Scotty is a professed Christian. He's a follower of Jesus. And I watched as people come up with all sorts of crazy things about him and claiming things about him and questioning the sincerity of his faith. And for like a short period of time, we just were fascinated with this guy that got caught seemingly doing something wrong. How many of you also heard this week that the charges were dropped? And there was an investigation into mistreatment, and Scotty's decided not to press charges because he doesn't want to charge the people of Louisville. See, those things don't make the headlines because it's not the gotcha moment. We like the gotcha moment, and then we move on to the next one because that's what makes news. The problem is that doesn't really help our world in any way. In this series, we're talking about what our world needs now, and we've been unpacking Christ-like behavior that, truthfully, as Christians, as the church, we're not always exhibiting in an incredible way. We're sort of guilty of not showing what the Apostle Paul called the fruit of the Spirit, that there's these Christ-like traits that are actually things that are produced in us. They're produced through us, and they're called the fruit of the Spirit. And we've been through a whole list of these. If you're just starting with us or just jumping in with us, we're near the end of the list. But we've talked about love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness. The next one up on the list is gentleness, which is funny because I played golf with a friend today and he asked me what I was preaching on this week. And I told him gentleness and he goes, of all the things I think of when I think of you preaching, I don't think of gentleness. So I was like, thank you for that vote of confidence, but I'm preaching on gentleness today. But before we get to that, a few weeks ago, I actually drew the assignment of kindness. And we talked in that message, if you weren't here, we talked in that message about a moment when somebody was caught, a gotcha moment. And if you were here for that, today is going to feel a little bit like part B of that message because these two words are very closely related. In fact, one of our translations translates this word gentleness. They're two different Greek words, but they have similar meanings. But they're enough dissimilar that we're going to pull them apart a little bit. And one's going to feel like part A and part B. If you weren't with us a few weeks ago, we talked about kindness. We talked about the fact that Jesus was in this moment when this woman was caught in adultery. He was the perfect display of the fullness of grace towards her and the fullness of truth towards her. And in that moment showed his loving kindness. And it was challenging to us about what we do when we catch people. The question is, what happens after that? So what happened next? That story kind of ended there. And what we're going to look at today, the Apostle Paul talks about what we do then. There's a gentleness that comes behind this kindness. And what's interesting about this word gentleness is of all the words in the list, of all the words Paul could have come back to just a few sentences later. So this list appears in our Bible in what's called Galatians chapter 5. To the end of Galatians chapter 5. Well, the beginning of Galatians chapter 6, Paul circles back at one of these fruit, and it's the one called gentleness. And he starts this way. Galatians chapter 6, verse 1, he says, "Brothers and sisters, if someone's caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit." So he starts out and he says, look, brothers and sisters, if you call yourself a follower of Jesus, he's essentially saying, look, if you're a Jesus follower, or you're a Christian, when someone's caught, which this is his way of talking about the gotcha moment. If somebody's caught, you have a role. There's something, if you're a Jesus follower, when somebody's caught, you have something to do. You have a job to do. And I imagine there's some of the religious types, the real, you know, keep the law tight types that are sort of wringing their hands at this point, and they're really leaning in. And they're sort of thinking, okay, Paul, great, you're going to tell us now what we get to do with all those people who are secretly doing the things we wish we could be doing. Tell us, what do we get to do to those people? And it's not the type of spirit that Paul's going to describe, he's going to talk about. But some of you have experienced this. In fact, some of you have experienced this close up in your lives. Maybe it was somebody close to you, and maybe it was even in the church that you experienced this. It wasn't necessarily that someone got caught. That happens all the time. You know, people get caught messing up or doing things. It was how they got caught. And these experiences, whether you're a church person or not, and if you're here for the first time, or you're new, or you're just coming back to church, this might be one of the reasons that you left church, is you saw how somebody was treated in a place that you thought would be kind and gracious towards them. But how they were caught profoundly shaped the way you viewed the church and the way you viewed Christians. And the truth is, that does that for all of us. And someone messed up, and maybe it was you. And it's usually something that was done in private. And they're trying to keep it a secret because they're afraid of what other people will think, but they get away with it. And maybe over a period of time, and maybe that grows into a habit or some type of an addiction, or that inappropriate conversation turns into an affair or an ethical, unethical business practice. It could be a double life, but it had to be kept in secret. And the problem, though, is, and eventually, that behavior begins to have an implication and a broader impact around them. People don't know exactly what's going on, but they know something's going on. And you've been a part of this. You've seen this. You've experienced this. And what began as somebody messed up, or maybe you messed up, was now turning into a big mess. And then it happened. They were caught, or you were caught. Someone was caught by somebody religious, or somebody who was in authority, or somebody who was in charge. And this happens in the workplace. It happens in religious settings. It happens in social settings. It happens in families. But somebody was caught. And usually a religious person inserts themselves. And if, you know, one of the things I think all the time when somebody steps into something that's not really their business, I think, why do they care anyway? And they the thing is they don't care in the way we wish they would have cared, do they? But they cared, and somehow they inserted themselves. And when they showed up, they made you feel worse, not better. In fact, in some cases, they did more damage than they did good. And I'll just say this, if that's your story or that's you, I'm so glad that you're here. I'm so glad that you're listening, because that's not the way it's supposed to be. And sometimes we forget our place. We forget how we're supposed to treat people. And in some cases, in those circumstances, maybe it was you, maybe you were asked to leave, or maybe they just made you want to leave. But you watch this happen, or it happened to somebody you love, and for you, you thought saw somebody representing God mow somebody down, a family member, a friend, a parent, and you just thought, you know what, I don't want any part of this. And the only thing that for you, the reason this didn't happen to you is because you just didn't get caught. And the truth is for some of us, you're so glad you didn't get caught. But here's the thing I want to talk about today. Isn't it true most of the time, we wish someone would have just been there to help us with the mess when it was manageable, when we just messed up or we just got into it. We thought, who am I going to tell? Who am I going to talk to? Where is there a soft landing for me? But then it became a much bigger deal. It became overwhelming and it became devastating. And that's because we didn't have a soft place to land. And this is what the Apostle Paul's talking about. And given our experiences, it's not what he's about to instruct us to do, but given our experiences, we would think his instructions were that the people who live by the Spirit, or you Christians, you brothers and sisters, you should expose people publicly, or you should rebuke people quickly, harshly. You should condemn those people harshly. But most of you know that that's not what the Apostle Paul says. Rather, he says, those who are led by the Spirit, these are two important words, you should restore that person gently. When somebody's caught in a sin, when they're exposed, those of you, if you're going to be led by the Spirit, you should restore those people gently. Now, I imagine the people, the Pharisee types, the law types, they're thrilled with the catch. They love the thrill of the catch. They weren't thrilled with this response. But this is our word, this word gently. This is how this plays out, and it modifies the word restore. And basically, the Apostle Paul, what he's saying is, listen, if those of you who are Christians, you're to be in the restoration business. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be in the restoration business. If you're going to call yourself a Christian, when somebody's caught, there's something for you to do, and you're to show up, and your goal is to be restoration. Several years ago, my wife and I, we were looking to build a new house, and we didn't end up building the house. We didn't end up buying a piece of property. We were thinking about it, but we were looking. We went and looked. We were driving around. We looked at a bunch of different pieces of property, and we found a piece of property, and there was an old condemned house on the piece of property that looked something like this. And as we drove up this little kind of overgrown grass, old rock and some asphalt, we were driving up towards the side of the house. My wife said, "I think this place has potential." And I was like, "Are you kidding me?" I was like, "If we bought this property, it's amazing. If we bought this property, the first thing we would do would bulldoze this house." And she's like, "What?" I was like, "Yes, we bulldoze this house." Now, this is the difference between me and my wife. And there's a powerful difference here. This house was condemned. And there's a big difference between condemning and restoring. There's a huge difference. And the difference is powerful. When you think about things that are condemned, let's just go with the house illustration for a second. When you think about things that are when you're going to condemn a house, or you're going to condemn it and you're going to destroy it, the reality is this is easy. It's a simple thing to do. It's not difficult. And not only that, you just make a simple judgment. This is not worthy of being fixed. It's not worthy of restoring, and it's destructive. If you just think about it, when you condemn something, it's easy. It's a simple judgment, and it's destructive. It considers something, or in our cases for our discussion today, someone, as worthless, or at least unworthy of the time or the effort or the complication. Do you know how challenging, how difficult this would be to fix or to restore it? But that's not how people think who are in the restoration business. Some of you have restored homes. Some of you restore furniture. Some of you restore vehicles. And for some of you, it's a hobby. For some of you, it's a passion. For some of you, it's a business. But people who are in the restoration business, they don't think this way. They look beyond current reality. They see what could be. When they see that, what they see is this. They see something dramatically different. And to be clear, this is not simple. This going from the condemned house to this is challenging work. And And it's no different when it comes to people. This is challenging. It's not simple. It's very complicated. And it because of the challenge, there's lots of roadblocks. It takes commitment. You have to be committed to this process. But rather than being destructive, it's constructive. And I think this information, this distinction by Paul, this is instructive to us. And it sort of acknowledges, like, look, this is a messy process. Restoration can be a messy process. It takes a lot of time and a lot of energy, but it sees the potential. Think about this. This is what you would want for you, right? It sees the potential. It sees the value. It sees the worth. It sees what could be, not just in things, but in people. And it's easy once people are caught. It's easy to, the easiest path is just to slap a mental sticker. And this is what our world does. This is what our culture does. We slap the sticker on that says canceled. We slap the sticker on it that says condemned. And we just walk away. We just move on. We formulate an opinion. It's not difficult. It's easy. It's a simple judgment. And the things that are said, the things that are done, they're destructive. But that's not what we need when we're stumbling and falling. That's not what we need when we're in a mess. And that's not what our world needs. The effort to engage in the restoration process, while it's far more challenging, Paul says, that's what people do when they're led by the Spirit. That's what the Spirit produces if you're led by the Spirit. So the question is, how are we led by the Spirit? Because that's not something we produce, but it's something we're led to do. Some of you may have read the book. There's a book by Stephen Covey called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's an old book. It's been around for quite a while. And in this book, he talks about 7 habits that make people successful or habits that make people effective in life. And one of the habits he talks about is beginning with the end in mind. Now, if you're a leader, I recommend the book. I've read it many years ago. I haven't read it recently, but I did reread this chapter. And the whole idea of this chapter is getting a clear picture of your end goal. Like, it's what's the target? What's the target for what you're trying to accomplish? And when you get crystal clear on the target, you move towards what you're focused on. You know this. When you learn to drive, you don't look at the lines on the side of the road. You look down the middle of the road and you try to figure out, where am I trying to go to? And what's the target? What's the target of what I'm aiming at? And when you figure out the target of what you're aiming at, you can be headed towards and you can accomplish what your goal is. And this is the idea. This is the idea of what the Apostle Paul's talking about. If the end goal, if what we're shooting for is, and we have a choice, you have a choice between this and this. And if the end goal is restoration, it changes the way you go about relating. It changes the way you go about catching people. As a matter of fact, this is not just a game changer, it's a word changer. I want to go back to our verse for a second. It says in the beginning, if someone is caught, I want to come back to this word caught, because this is the gotcha word. If somebody's caught, when you catch somebody, this is such a unique word. There's different ways to catch people. The word has different meanings. It's like the word bill, which is awesome if you got a bunch of them with dead presidents on them. Those bills are amazing. If it's your water invoice or your power invoice in the summer, it's depressing. So there's two different ways. And there's two different ways to be caught. I think this is fascinating. And we don't think about it this way, but you can be caught in more than one way. And you can be caught in a net. And if you've ever seen any of the wildlife shows, you know, you know that, you know, like when people get out in the bush and they get out in these remote places, they use old and unconventional ways of trapping animals and catching animals. And you see this a lot. When you watch these National Geographic shows. But this is one way to get caught. You can get caught in a net. And there's a difference between being caught in a net. That's one way to be caught. But you can also be caught by a net. And it looks very different. And the experience is very different. When you're caught in a net, you're ensnared, you're entangled, you're in danger. But when you're caught by a net, there's safety. There's sort of that soft landing we talked about a minute ago. It's like, no, this is what I'd really like to experience. When I'm falling, when I'm stumbling and falling, the last thing I need is somebody to catch me in a net and drag me out in front of a bunch of people. Like, what I need is, I need a soft landing. I need to be caught in a net. There's two different ways to be caught. And caught in a net implies danger. And I don't know about you, but the last place I'm moving towards when I'm stumbling and falling and I've messed up, I'm not moving towards places of danger. I'm looking for places of safety, and being caught by a net implies a safety. But what's interesting about both of these things, and this will sound funny, but both of these imply strength. Like there's a strength to this position, to the person who's catching, whether they're catching in a net or they're catching by a net, there's a strength in that position that requires trust. And oftentimes when we trust people and we find out that they're not safe people, the reality is we move away from those environments. We move away from those groups of people. What's funny though is we don't associate gentleness with strength. Remember, the Apostle Paul says, restore people gently, but I want you to think about this for a second. In the same way we confuse kindness and niceness, people also confuse gentleness with weakness. Gentleness necessitates strength. Gentleness isn't weak. Gentleness doesn't exist without strength. A lack of strength is weakness, but you have to have strength to exhibit gentleness. Several years ago, my son, who's now 17, and my oldest son, and I have two little boys that are now 8 and 10, but several years ago, when they were littler, we used to all wrestle. We had this big room in our house, it's a carpeted room, and we'd wrestle, and the little boys, they really loved wrestling, and I'd throw them around, and, you know, of course, always trying to be careful that I don't, but they like to play rough, and, you know, they attack me, and I'd throw them around, and, you know, but you know, try to be careful they're not banging heads, and because they're attacking me at one time, and then my older son would come in, he get on the action. I was a little rougher with him, but all the time trying to be gentle. Well, one day I walk in the room and my oldest is throwing them around and they've got rug burns and bumps on their heads. And I'm like, hold on. You have to be gentle. And he's like, you throw them around? I'm like, yeah, but I'm making sure they don't slam their head on the tile. Like I'm being gentle. You got to be more gentle. Now think about this. Think. If he wasn't stronger, if he wasn't in a position of strength, I wouldn't have to coach him to be gentle. This is the same thing that's true when we catch someone. When you catch someone, regardless of how you catch them, you're in a position of strength. That information, when you're there, that moment, that gotcha moment, is a position of strength. The question is this: how should you leverage that position of strength? If you're in a position of strength, how should you leverage it? Now, this is one of the things I love about the brilliance of the scriptures. If you don't read your Bible, you should. We're just unpacking one verse today, which you could say, well, it's not even a sermon, but we're going deep on one verse, just one verse. The next phrase is so revealing, so helpful, so insightful, so instructive, not on the surface, but if you're thoughtful about it. The very next verse, after he says, those who are led by the Spirit, restore people gently, this is what he says, but watch yourselves. You got to watch out. Or you also might be tempted. Now, for a long time, I used to read this verse, and I would think, well, I need to be careful because if I'm going to wade into those waters and try and help somebody, I might get sucked into the same sin, which is one way to read that. But maybe a more thoughtful way, a more sober way to look at this is to say, hey, you need to watch yourself because you also could be tempted. Another way to say that is this could just as easily be you. You're the catcher right now, but at some point you're going to get caught. How are you going to leverage your position of strength when you catch someone? Another way to ask that is, well, how would you want to be caught when someone catches you? Because it could be you, and it might be you, and at some time it probably will be you. And come on, this is what we all need. We need to be caught in the right way. We need to be caught. But we need to be caught in the right way. And what do you hope that gotcha moment looks like in your life? What would you hope they would be like? Like, gotcha. I gotcha. Everybody, you see this guy? Got him. You see what he did? Or would you want somebody to go, hey, I gotcha. We're gonna get through this together. I'm going to walk with you. I'm going to carry this burden with you. See, this is so countercultural. This is not what we do. It is unnatural in our culture. But this is how you practice gentleness. And again, it's not something you do. It's something that's produced in you. And I think this verse is so insightful because this verse causes us to ask the question, what if it was me? What if it were me? I mean, or when it was me, what did I wish somebody had done for me? Or at some point when it is me, what do I hope somebody does for me? How do I hope somebody catches me? And to Paul's earlier point, what's my goal? I mean, what's your goal really? I mean, is the bullseye and the target really restoration? Or is it condemnation? Is it pushing somebody else down, putting the focus on somebody else so nobody will look at you so you won't get caught? Or is the goal really, when you think about it, to go, gosh, my goal is to be restoration. Well, so now what's my next step? What do I do? How do I catch if my goal is restoration? Because that's what the Apostle Paul says. Those who are led by the Spirit, that's to be their goal. I had a friend recently reach out to me. I got his permission to share this. He was in the middle of a situation where he was navigating a mess with somebody. And they had made some poor choices and were in a bit of a mess. And they were calling me. He was calling me to find out, like, what did I think we should do? He's calling me as a pastor of the church. And it's so interesting. He's going to share these details that I don't know. And he's going to share some information with me. And I love this because he told his wife he was going to call me. And she sat him down and she said, which I love this. She's like, before you call, you need to get crystal clear about what your goal is. Think about that. When you're going to take a step, when somebody's caught or you find out some information, whatever you do, you should begin with the end in mind. Get crystal clear about what your goal is, because if your goal is restoration, it doesn't involve gossip. If your goal is restoration, it doesn't involve condemnation. If your goal is restoration, it doesn't simply make a judgment and say destructive things to somebody. It takes a very different tone and a very different posture. You see, this first question, what if it was me, it produces a humility inside of us that says, hey, I'm no different. I didn't do this, and we think we're not capable, but it cultivates some humility. And the second question, what is my goal? It brings clarity. And these two questions change everything about how we catch. Together, these two things, they produce gentleness if restoration's the goal. If restoration is truly the goal, then how we catch completely changes. I mean, if restoration's the goal, and that's really the target of what we want, the reality is that will determine how we leverage our position of strength. If this is our goal, knowingly or unknowingly, that is how we will leverage our position of strength. So here's my question. What does our world need? Does it need people pointing out their faults? Does it need people highlighting people that are messing up and maybe messing their lives up? I mean, what do you want to be known for? What do you hope we're known for? What if the reputation of Christians, the reputation of your circle of friends, the reputation of the church wasn't catching people messing up, but rather catching people when they stumble and fall? What if this was our posture? What if the church was the safest place to land when you stumble and fall? Think about how different people would feel when they fell here, when they landed here, when you landed here, when those who are far from God that you're praying for, that you care about, that you hope one day will land here. How do you hope they're caught? See, this matters. Let me ask you, when you think about the church, when you think about Christians, do you think condemnation or restoration? I mean, we have a bit of a PR problem, but the reality is we have control of it. We can decide to change the reputation. When you think about your life and your interactions with people, I mean, is it more characterized by condemnation or restoration? When you think about your small group, when you think about your volunteer teams that you're a part of, when you think about your close friends, when you think about your family, when you think about the type of culture you're trying to create in your workplace, in your business, those of you who are leaders, in the classroom, for those of you who are teachers, in your home, for those of you who are parents, would the people who look to you that you're an authority over when you catch them, do they think condemnation or restoration? When you think of North Point Community Church, when you think of Brownsbridge Church, when you think of Woodstock City Church, when you think of East Cobb Church, of Gwinnett Church, Decatur City Church, Buckhead Church, Southside Church, Athens Church, and I could go on. When you think of your church, do you think condemnation or restoration? Because you're the church. It's not me. It's not the guy standing up here. I mean, I'm part of it. I'm just like you, though. And when your friends who don't do church, when they think of your church, do they think condemnation or restoration? Don't miss this. This is so, so important. What if we all caught others the way we wanted to be caught? If we just did that. Well, what if rather than the gotcha moments that are pointing out everybody's faults and failures, what if our posture truly was, hey, we got you. This is a safe place to stumble and fall. Think about this. If we became known as a place where people are safely and gently caught, we'll have more opportunities to catch. It's true. Future opportunities to care for, love on, and lift up people who are stumbling and falling are at stake every time you catch, every time I catch, every time we catch somebody. How we catch them determines whether we'll have future opportunities to catch people. And one day it might be somebody you love, or that somebody someday might just be you. God, I pray today that you just start with us. I just pray we'd walk out of whatever building people are in, or if they're listening in their car or wherever they are, I pray that they walk out of whatever place they're in today completely transformed and changed and decided in their heart and in their mind they're going to catch the way they want to be caught. Help our churches, our network, our group of churches to begin to change the way people think about church and think about Christians. One, because we want to be caught well within this body, within this group, within this family. And I just pray one by one, one interaction after the next, as each one of us catches, that you'd use these two questions. What if it was me? And what's my goal really? Is it really restoration? And is what I'm about to do, or what I'm about to say, really lead towards restoration? May it transform the way we catch people and transform the way people see your church, that this would be the safest place to stumble and to fall. Whether you're already inside the church and inside the faith, or if you're outside, I just pray that we would be what our world needs now, just one interaction at a time, catching one person at a time, safely and gently, and leading them towards restoration. And I pray it in Jesus' name. Amen.